This is the Friday, July 7th, 2017 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Dan Huber. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
We've got a lot of questions from folks on Facebook and Twitter, and so we're just going to dive right in, if that's all right with you.
Sounds great by me.
Let's do it. So we've got a question here from Roger. He's on Twitter at Roger Rediger. Roger's saying, with KC, July 2018, HRW over $6, what portion of next year's wheat crop should be sold on this rally?
Well, yeah, and great question. Again, granted, I guess part of it is, all your kind of risk tolerance out there. But as much as anything, if you are making a good, consistent return, and I recognize these are not numbers we've seen for some time in that KC market or the Chicago market for that matter. But I think between the 6 and 650 range, I mean, I have no hesitation in being 25-30% sold. Recognizing as well, we're not too far off of setting our base price for the crop insurance for next year. So, I don't necessarily want to get too far ahead of that. But here again, I think most people are going to look at a pretty reasonable return on investment up north of $6 and, to have that foundation, your own foundation set. If you're selling in that 25 to 30% range, you're probably covering what crop insurance won't anyway. So between the two, you might be 100% sold by the time that base price is set here this fall.
Hopefully north of $6.
Yeah, exactly.
For a lot of producers, because as you look out a little bit longer term, and of course this can change in a heartbeat, weather can always change, demand can change, but as things sit today, ceteris paribus, there's nothing that should make you think we're going to be running out of KC wheat.
No. I mean, and granted, the running out, of course, would be a bonanza situation as far as market price wise. But no, I mean, we still have ample stocks both domestically and globally. Now, granted, the projected stocks of next year, we're back under 1 billion bushels on wheat. So, I mean, the old adage in the market, of course, is that if ending stocks are low, steady to lower, prices will tend to move steady to higher, and of course, vice versa. So, yes, I mean, we are reducing the ending stock, so that should be price supportive. That doesn't mean we have to go exceedingly higher without developing some problems or issues maybe elsewhere. And again, we know Europe is having a little issue, particularly in France. I watched a little bit of the Tour de France in the last day, and 100-degree temperatures as they're riding, 75, 100 miles a day.
It's like South Dakota this week.
Well, exactly. But here too, Australia. I know most of the privates down there have reduced the projections for that crop. So those world stocks are going to contract, which should be price supportive, if nothing else.
Yes. So. All right. Well, our next question, we'll bring it back to Iowa.
Okay.
Nathan, up in Inwood, Iowa, he's on Twitter at Neuendorp_N, is asking, how much higher can hogs go before big supply catches up? We talked about that on the program. Or, he's wondering, is demand strong enough to keep the hog market increasing? You mentioned exports have been very strong. How much of a factor is China in that export game today in the hog market?
And of course, China themselves, I mean, and they have been a big importer, but of course, they've been on a pretty strong program to try to increase the herds there as well, hence the soybean and the meal demand that we continue to see moving over there. I don't see where the hog market's ready to stop and fall out of bed. I mean, so that export side of it is there. The market reacted well to the ideas of a 3% greater herd. That said, there's still some seasonality into it. And yes, we've discounted that into the ox and the deeces. My way of thinking is when you have this kind of a ride going, you still need to take advantage of it. You don't want to get nobody's going to pick the high side of the market, particularly in the livestock. I mean, I guess I'm a very strong proponent of using options in the livestock market. You can leave your upper end open. You've had enough volatility there that you can do some nice strategies with puts and calls to keep the premium down. You take advantage of it and still use the floor. Give yourself some upside room open. If you're going to short calls, do it a few dollars above where we've seen the markets trade. But don't assume that, we can't stop and head back in the other direction.
That's the thing, because it was last October, we were $46.
Oh, exactly.
Monthly in hogs.
Right.
And now October's trading north of 70.
North of 70, exactly.
Boy, so. $30 difference in 1 year.
And generally a time of the year when we see the hog market take a swoon. So, why not take advantage of that and at least have your foundation locked in there in case somebody decides they don't like our pork anymore.
Right, because things can always come out of left field.
Right.
Speaking of coming out of left field, I think this Minneapolis Spring Rally came out of left field. Mm-hmm. I think this run back to $4 has kind of come out of left field for a lot of corn producers.
Sure,
they kind of written it off. Phil in Ontario, Canada, is asking. He says 425 December corn remains elusive. What's it going to take to break through that barrier? Now that Deese is over four, where did we close? Four and a quarter? No, 404?
404, somewhere in there. Yeah, and really the first $4 close in over a year, I believe.
Yes.
A weekly close. So, you know, I think when I look at it just from a technical perspective, it looks like, you know, we still have everything pointed higher, that, you know, we have technically easily room to move in that 425 to 450 range. When you look at again, you know, you feel sorry for everybody here and north and west of here. From what I can see in the weather forecast, a lot of warm temperatures coming in, some rain in that forecast, but certainly not you would call any kind of a general accumulation of moisture. And I think that's probably going to be the element that's going to be enough to kind of tip us above the edge, I guess, in this case, and to send us up into that 425 to 50 zone.
Now, devil's advocate, are we still at a situation, I mean, we're early enough in the growing season that if we come around Sunday and the forecast has changed, and we know with this northwest flow, forecasts can and do change,
sure.
They've added moisture back in, are we going to be right back to testing 380 in December corn?
You know, the wheat probably has changed that some, unless we see the wheat market really come apart. So I think psychologically that scared enough shorts out of the market for now that they don't feel all that comfortable. Now, granted, we do have a supply-demand acre production estimate next week. Usually you don't see the USDA tinker with the yields too much on that first estimate. I mean, it's really just a beauty contest contest as much as anything. I think the trade's actually looking for about a bushel reduction in the, which may or may not be a good thing. You know, if you're already expecting a drop, you don't get it. It could be psychologically negative. So, yeah, it would really, I think, have to be a wholesale change in that weather forecast. And usually those only happen when there's a disruptive factor. I mean, another hurricane comes in, kind of really moves things out of the status quo. And, you know, the old adage that drought begets drought, you know, basically is intact here. And I think unless there's something very disruptive that can knock that pattern out of the plain states, you know, that's going to be.
We did see Informa release their statistics earlier this week. Corn, they brought their yield down to 169.7.
Sure.
Beans, they dropped to 47.9,
sure,
I believe.
Sure, yeah.
At this point in the game, do you put any stock in those estimates?
Not really. I mean, they're all still basically best guesses at this point in time. And sure, they might have a little statistical data to back that up. It is I guess I kind of looked more out to the satellite-generated models, Landworth and those type of people, and they were down towards 166, 167 range. So, personal bias, I think that's probably closer to accurate. Is that something we'll see the USDA say here next week? Probably not.
That would be a big move.
Oh,
I don't know if they've ever made a 3 or 4 bushel move.
You know, well, a few years ago, they did make some pretty big, I think in 12, they did make some big July adjustments. But, I mean, what an exceptional year.
Right.
We were already in a significant drought situation by July 1, you know, so it was kind of easy to make that kind of an adjustment. So.
All right. Well, we've got a question here from Roger in Kokomo, Indiana, and this is more of a market question.
Sure.
He wants to know, why should a farmer have to pay for real-time board prices? You get the free quotes on the web, they're always delayed 10 minutes,
sure.
And he notes, that seems kind of archaic in the world of frequency, you know, high frequency algorithmic based trading.
Sure.
10 minutes, boy, a lot can change.
Oh, yeah. Now, I guess the question mark is why do you feel you need that instantaneous quote? The simple answer is the Board of Trade charges it. I mean, that is an exchange fee. I mean, every one of us in the business, we want real time quotes, we have to pay it. I mean, so it's not like somebody gets a special compensation unless you are a member of the Board of Trade. Well, then certainly you can have that fee waived.
But you've paid it all up front.
Exactly.
Yes.
And probably paid for it over time as well. But that said, you know, I guess my thought, and here I look at the markets all the time. It's my livelihood. I don't actively put a lot of orders in, and, you know, for customers. Most of the other people in the office handle that. I don't need real time quotes. I mean, unless you're truly a day trader. You know, that information probably as much as anything can sometimes distract us, you know, because we get so focused on, you know, what's that last little tick? What's it going to do? You lose a little bit of a loss of sight of what that bigger picture is. And ultimately in the hedge business, That's the name of the game, is keeping the overall picture. If you're going to be a trader, I mean, if you're a short-term trader and you want to be in and out on a regular basis, then absolutely.
And hopefully, if you're going to be in and out on a regular basis, you'll make enough to justify the purchase
paying
of
the exchange
real-time
fees on top
quotes.
Of it. Right, right.
Yeah. But like you're saying, on the hedge game, set your targets, get those orders out there, let the market come to you.
Right, right. And, you know, here again, too, the tendency, if we tend to watch it too close, you know, we'll second guess what we just did. Well, maybe I better pull that, you know, the cancel of close order. And, yep. You know, those can be some of our worst enemies in, when it comes to risk management as well.
They absolutely can. Mm-hmm. Now, before we let you go, we are continuing our session with taking questions on video from students. Whether you're a student at high school or at any level in life, I think we're all probably students. Mm-hmm. And send us a video. Get out your smartphone, shoot us a video. This week, we are featuring a question from an Iowa State student. And you can learn more about this project if you listen to the M2M podcast number 143. So, Dan, here is the latest installment of our college-level ag student questions.
Very good.
What would you say is the best way to utilize futures in different farming operations?
Kind of a broad question.
Certainly. You know, and of course, I mean, each operation is a little bit different, but, you know, I would first back up to the point that, you know, I think there's this idea that using futures is something that's out of the ordinary. It, you know, maybe out of the ordinary. It is different. It certainly doesn't make anybody a better risk manager or a better marketer. You really need to kind of lay the foundation for whatever type of farming you're doing. I mean, be it livestock, be it crops, understand risk management first, understanding making a plan and how to put that plan into effect with discipline and consistency. Then, once you have mastered that, I don't know if we ever truly ever master it, once you have at least developed the discipline and the rules and the strength and understanding to do that, then it's fine to start looking and using futures and options. Now, granted, any tool that's available on the futures market is available in the cash market as well. I mean, be it a hedge to arrive contract, min-max contracts, those varieties are out there. Now, granted, the elevator, whoever, or the grain company that's using it, will oftentimes take a little larger fee than if you're doing it yourself. But if you really want an introduction to see how you react to it, that's a good stepping stone to do it. I mean, ultimately, you use futures for basis capturing, to capture a carry in markets for storage. You know, I think we have, again, this tendency to think that it's, boy, it's going to elevate our marketing to a new level. It can open new doors and new opportunities, but it isn't by any means anything that's an absolute. It's not going to make you a better marketer just because you stepped into it. So education is the key. I mean, you have to understand the tool you're using and why you're using it, and then go ahead and step into it. But, you know, of course, step into it lightly.
It is a tool. You know, it's like a saw. It can help you build a house, or it can take off your arm.
You know, we always use the analogy that if you perceive all, if the only tool you have, you're going to perceive all problems as a nail.
Yeah.
Now, more tools you have in the toolbox theoretically should give you an advantage when it comes to marketing. The key is knowing when to use that individual tool. There isn't all tools fit all the time, so know which ones to use when. So.
Well, Dan Huber, great advice as always. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And join us again next week when Tom Fitzenmaier will sit across from me at the market-to-market table, and we'll examine the work scientists are exploring in the use of genetically engineered insects. Until then, thanks for watching or listening. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.